Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello, welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport. My goodness, it's a windy old day, Catherine Whittaker, as we stand here just ahead of the night session. And we've witnessed Carl Edmund against Denis Shapovalov. We've seen Venus Williams go through. All sorts of stuff has happened so far today. How's your day gone, Catherine?
Better than it went for Marin Cilic, I think. You didn't mention it. That's probably the... I mean, in an ordinary Grand Slam, that probably wouldn't be as big a story as it is. But the only Grand Slam finalist or champion left in the bottom half of the draw going out, big old story.
It is a big old story. Quite a surprise. I mean, one or two people suggesting that certainly Mark Pecci felt that Diego Schwartzman would win. That's what I heard after the match. But Marin Cilic on paper, former champion, that leaves a huge gap now in the bottom half of the draw because, I mean, we already knew it was pretty open, but there is not one player who has reached a Grand Slam final in the bottom half of the men's singles.
And if you wonder what that huge opportunity and the pressure of that opportunity does to people, just look at the fact that Sam Querrey, the only man in that bottom half of the draw Dominic Thiem's top half, isn't he? The only man in that bottom half of the draw that's been in a Grand Slam semi-final. He's currently a set all against Randy Welbot, lost the first set. And I struggle, okay, I don't know this for sure, but I struggle to think that's not something to do with the situation he's in. This enormous opportunity, the like of which has rarely been seen in men's tennis. I mean, Australian Open 2002, when Thomas Johansson won, and I remember Tim Henman was the top seed left in at the fourth round stage or something and then lost to Jonas Björkman. But beyond that, I can't really remember a Grand Slam like this, in the bottom half certainly. Not the case in the top half on paper at least, but in the bottom half, it's getting a bit silly now.
It is getting a bit silly. I know what you mean. That pressure is starting to tell on certain players. One man who doesn't seem to feel pressure, I don't even know if you can call him a man, he's a kid, is Denis Shapovalov. And he's qualified, he's come all the way through to the third round, he's played Kyle Edmund. Edmund, I thought, played pretty well, and I felt quite sorry for him because he had to pull out with that neck injury at the start of the fourth set, and the writing was on the wall halfway through that third set when he first started to feel the twinge. But he was going hammer and tongue at it with him, wasn't he? But I still felt in that third set that it was starting to turn Dennis's way, to be honest, because he's just got such a complete game.
Yeah, I still feel like it's a match or a portion of a match that we can analyse because it was kind of something that went for Carl Edmund rather than an injury he came on to the court with that grew worse. It was something that went while he was serving in the game prior to him calling the trainer on the court. So we can analyse what was happening before that. I thought Carl played really well, and there are the cliched positives for him to take from that match and the whole experience. But I agree with you. Shapovalov was figuring it out and settling down and getting the better of it. And I do think, injury or no injury, he probably, as much as you can say anything confidently about this tournament, he probably would have come through. And I think from a Shapovalov perspective, that's a really encouraging sign. That's something he hasn't had to do in this tournament. The fact that he it wasn't all going his own way. He wasn't just striding out there and everyone marvelling again at how amazing he is and just how serenely he responds to every situation. He didn't in that first set. He was struggling a bit with timing. I think he was struggling a bit with the light at the right, on the right side of the court, as you look at it from the umpire's chair. The fact that the ball goes in and out of bright, bright sunshine into dark shade. But he figured it out and he didn't panic and he settled down. And if he's going to, I'll just say, go deep in this tournament at this stage, he's going to need to be able to do that. He's not going to do it in all straight sets romps like he did against Songa, so the signs are good for him.
What I find particularly impressive, and there's many things to find impressive, and it was interesting watching Kyle try to unload on his forehand and the various parts of Shapovalov's game dealing with that power, the backhand, which is struck so sweetly, the forehand, which is a weapon all of its own, really, and I don't think it probably gets quite the headlines that it deserves. I think it will end up getting them because it's a destructive shot. But the biggest thing for me is the way he competes every single point. He doesn't check out of matches. He doesn't go walkabout for 20 minutes. He keeps on trying. And, you know, you were quite scathing about me when I suggested there were similarities between him and Leighton Hewitt. I stand by it. He looks like him. He gives me the same feel in terms of his body language. The ferociousness of Leighton Hewitt's attitude to every single point, maybe that's a step too far at this stage, but he is a real fighter.
It's interesting, though, that he told us after his win over Songa on the on-court interview that jitteriness at the change of ends, which for me is reminiscent, that aspect of him is reminiscent of Hewitt, that sort of legs always jiggling and or just cannot sit still. He's manufactured that. It's a confection that his mum told him to do because she said that he was suffering too many lulls in concentration after the sit-down. So she said, just keep your energy up throughout the sit-down. Keep the buzz alive. So he's confected that, which I find very interesting. His mum, incidentally, who's his main coach, she's not here because she's got another job as a coach at a club back in Canada. And he very sweetly said after the match that, yeah, that's, you know, that job's also really important to her and it's a very important time of year. And he doesn't, I'm sure she'll be here for his next. I mean, his dad's on holiday in Greece.
Awesome.
he's a child without he's an unchaperoned child.
I better not stick him on another night session because I'm not even sure that's legal. Anyway, Denis Shapovalov, the other thing is to just mention about the guy is that he is really starting to capture the imagination around here. Not only is he getting the Arthur Ashe Stadium billing, he is getting a lot of media interest. We're now at the stage where our good friend Nicola Azzani from the ATP, who works out all the timings for the players' interviews and gets them where they need to be, he was texting me today saying, for your interview, and it wasn't actually me who did it, it was a colleague of mine, for the BBC interview, could you do it while walking to the ESPN interview? Because that's how many you've got to do. So, I mean, look, we totally understand that that's what it's like, and we fit in as best we can, but that's how it is. There's a block of time, and if he's going to be able to at least recover for the next match and do all the things he needs to do, you've got to try and slot all of these interviews in. He does them with really good grace, does Denis Shapovalov, from what I've seen so far. He is only 18. Hope that continues, but well, he rolls on. Tell you what though, Pablo Carreño Busta in the next round, that's tough.
It is tough because he's so, so solid. He's the sort of guy that can find out in experience. I still pick Shapovalov. I mean, I picked him for the quarterfinal before the tournament, so I can't duck out now that everyone else has realised how good he is. So
you slightly don't like the fact that everybody's just jumping on the bandwagon, don't you?
So yeah, I think it'll be a tough test, but I've got to stick with it now, haven't I?
Honestly, if you could see her face right now, how pleased with herself she is.
I'm pleased with the situation. I haven't felt this way about tennis, but he makes me feel like a kid discovering tennis again for the first time. There's just something so new and exciting about it. I can't really... It's difficult to describe. I just want to watch him play tennis. And there was a Eurosport did a Haimo sort of graphic of his... backhand, just because Annabelle was wanting to demonstrate the follow-through on that backhand. And I agree with you that it's the flashier shot, but the forehand is actually probably even better. But in terms of aesthetic grace, that backhand, so the follow-through, he not only opens his arms go back, they almost touch, his hands almost touch behind his back. I mean, I'll shut up now, but he's really good.
Just watch the high mo or whatever one of those is. I've no idea.
It's slower and more high res than slow mo. It's an upgrade on slow mo.
TV talk. Don't understand it. I'm a radio bloke. Anyway, so that happened. Denis Shapovalov is very much through. We await to see what happens with John Isner and Sam Querrey. On the women's side of the draw, Venus Williams was comfortable today. Straight sets winner over Maria Sakkari. Talking about being comfortable, Garbiñe Muguruza. Somebody didn't send her the memo that this is the tournament of upsets, did they?
She's not having any of it, is she? I mean, she looks better and better with every round. She's ominous to me, really, really ominous. It's quite often you get these obviously not in the men's, but these draws where everyone falls away and there's just one person at the pinnacle that's watching it all happen, and it kind of feels like she's that one at the moment. But there are others. Venus has looked great. Kvitova looked great. Really great this morning. Six love.
They play against each other
against
next.
Against Caroline Garcia. She's played three really tough matches, three tough opening rounds. She's won them all extremely convincingly. Now, I'm not going to get overexcited. It's still very early days in her comeback, etc., etc., but she's been very convincing so far.
She certainly has, yeah. So Garbiñe Muguruza is through. Now, before we have a little bit of a look ahead, do you know what I'm going to do, Catherine? I'm just going to have a little wander over here, because as a very special guest in New York this year, we have student Matt at the US Open for the very first time. Our very own student Matt, Catherine Whittaker. He's standing here outside the practice course. Who'd have thought
it? We all live in the UK, and it's taken us all to decamp to New York to get student Matt on.
Highlights of your journey here so far, student Matt.
Well, hello, everyone. Well, just being here, really. Arthur Ashe, walking out there for the first time after climbing all the stairs. But yeah, what a stadium that is. Watching Shapovalov, I know we both like, well, we all like him. And for me, the best match I saw was Verev versus Čurić out on the grandstand.
Oh, really? Why was that?
Just these 30-shot rallies on break point. An upset. I had Verev getting to the final, I think, and I think we all did. Really.
Did we?
We don't talk about predictions anymore.
No, sorry. What else?
Who were the crowd going for in that match? Out of interest,
they were going for Čurić, I think, after the first set, because they wanted a match. But then they were going for Zverev, and he had three set points to take it to a fifth. Messed it up with a really long rally and. Yeah, they were really rooting for him. Really good atmosphere on the night session, and it's everything the US Open was about, really.
I could hear the roars from that match on the grandstand court over on the temporary Louis Armstrong court where Kyle Edmund was playing Steve Johnson, which is, I mean, there's probably, I'm exaggerating slightly, but not that much. There's probably about a mile in between those two courts. They're at the two opposite ends of the tennis centre here, and I was delighted to be watching Carl, don't get me wrong, but hearing those roars I was envious, and I could see on Twitter that you were there, Matt, and I was a bit envious.
Yeah, student Matt has been here, everybody, wearing his Tennis Podcast t-shirt. That is how dedicated we're talking about his dedication to the cause. That's it for you though, isn't it? Now you've got to go home to reality.
I do, yes. Yeah, got to watch it on the TV, listen, you know, which is great.
Listen to the radio is what you were going to say there.
What channel would that be on, Matt?
Eurosport.
And listening, meanwhile, with an earphone in to
BBC Radio 5 Live.
And then every night,
the Tennis Podcast.
I tell you, we've got him absolutely brainwashed here on the Tennis Podcast. Matt, it's been lovely to see you. Thank you for stopping by. Thank you for all you do for the Tennis Podcast throughout the year. This guy is a legend, isn't he?
He's a ledge.
It's Tell you what.
Saying that, that felt awful coming out.
Catherine Whittaker.
Felt awful.
I will take it.
She's down with the kids. Catherine Whittaker is here. Matt, safe travels home.
Thank you.
Lovely to see you. Now, we've got to look ahead to... Let's just step over here next to our bags so that, A, somebody doesn't blow them up, and, B, somebody doesn't walk off with them. Catherine, the...
An explosives dog coming over. That would be great.
Well, that's right. Actually, if you haven't seen the new Catherine Whittaker feature...
It's not new. It's not new. It's just the world that are late adopters.
Okay, well, like Catherine has started her own little feature, which is Catherine has pictures with guard dogs, isn't it?
They're police dogs.
Police dogs.
I mean, that feature is a feature of my life, just approaching random dogs and asking if I can cuddle.
Is that what you do?
Yeah, that's a sort of daily thing.
Have you ever had an owner go, do you mind just going away?
No, because dog owners are the best people in the world, David.
I'm not a dog owner.
Yeah. Get on it.
Right. So, tomorrow, we have various people on the order of play. I tell you, my Agnieszka Radwanska for the final pick is going to take some serious examination tomorrow.
It's going to take a literal battering.
From Miss Coco Vanderway, because those two are going to go head-to-head tomorrow on the Arthur Ashe Stadium. And... I don't know.
And
I mean,
what,
look.
David,
well, first of all, I've got Agnieszka Radwanska going all the way, haven't I? But what do you think out of interest?
I think Vanderway's going to win. It's going to be a test of what Pat Cash, who we're going to hear from in a minute, has been working on with her, which is patience and not feeling like you have to.
Let's hear what Pat Cash has got to say about it all.
Well, you know what? She's a really passionate American player. She always plays Fed Cup. She always wants to play for the Olympics. Yeah, you know, this for her is the biggest event there is. I mean, obviously Wimbledon is huge as a tournament, but for her to have her supporters here and everything, and it throws up a different. Issue, of course, is that she wants to perform so well in front of her fans, and you know, she struggled in the first round and got it together, but you know, what we've been working on is really trying to bring, you know, I talk openly about this to her, is trying to bring the really good Coco that we know and the bad Coco closer to that good Coco, so that when on the bad days and if she's nervous and if things don't go well, that she can settle down really quickly. And that sort of involves a whole lot of things, from sports, from psychologist to changing her technique to focusing on different issues, on how to play points and how to learn. So, and this can't be done overnight. But I'm really proud of the things that she's done. She's improved unbelievably. We haven't necessarily seen the results yet. She had a great week in Stanford at the beginning of the tour, where she got to the final, had a really good final and won the doubles as well. So, you know, obviously we're hoping it all comes together this week, but, you know, we're pretty confident it'll come together at some stage.
So what's the good Coco then? What's the Coco you are hoping to achieve more of the time?
Well, less unforced errors. I think that's obvious. She's got the power. There's no doubt she's got the power. She's got the serve that we've tweaked a little bit. We're trying to get the service percentage up in that area. Her returns have improved out of sight, so it was always a bit hit and miss. So she would hit two winners and she'd miss three errors, and that was, you know, that's, she would break serve and then all of a sudden she would, you know, make mistakes, and people would always say, oh my, you know, what's wrong with her? She can't concentrate. There's something wrong with that. And then she'd lose her temper. She wouldn't know why. You know, she was like so frustrated. And, you know, a lot of that was down to technique. We had to fix that up, and she gets an understanding of that now. So, you know, if she can make returns and if she can stay there and thereabouts with the girls at the back of the court, her power will take over eventually. And that's what we sort of want to do, and say, listen, you know, if you hang with these girls, eventually they're going to say, well, how can I beat this? How can I beat Coco? She's not making mistakes. That's the old Coco. She used to make mistakes and give her free points and games and sets. We don't want that anymore. And she's doing it. She's really achieved a lot in that area.
So there's Pat Cash talking about Coco Vanderway ahead of her match against Agnieszka Radwanska on Saturday. I love that combination, Pat Cash and Coco Vanderway. I mean, I sat next to them in the commentary box on the Wimbledon semi-finals of Thomas Burdick against Roger Federer, when Pat invited her into the commentary box to sit up close and watch Roger Federer's footwork. And it was just fascinating to see. somebody trying to learn from the very best. And he's trying to instill a slightly different approach and attitude. And yeah, I hope it prospers as a combination. But I still think that Radwanska may be able to just tie her up in enough knots that she can't get out of.
I think she'll tie her up in some knots. I just think Van der Weyde will undo those knots in the end. She is. I think that relationship really works. I can't quite put my finger on why, but Pat's really into it. He's really, really into making a success of that and making a success of her. I think he's nervous. I think she's nervous in a way that she's never been before, playing here in New York as a slightly different player to what she's been before when she's played here. You know, he mentions the fact that all her family come and watch her when she plays here, and that puts a different spin on things. So I think she's putting pressure on herself, but she is the most self-assured person it's so alien to us Brits, isn't it? I mean, Americans in general, but she's the most American there is. And some of it, I mean, I love that Americanness, but it's to such an extreme that some of it grates on me, I must admit. When she was in the ESPN studio yesterday, just like running the place. They were loving it. The crowd here were loving it. It's great, but...
Running the place, what do you mean?
Just like sat there like she owned the place, you know, some of the quotes coming out of...
Just extreme confidence.
Just extreme confidence, yeah. And that's, you know, she's unapologetic for that. And
she gets
her far. It's just doesn't always sit brilliantly with our Britishness, does it?
we apologise for existing most of the time, as you can tell. If I name drop, I feel embarrassed about it. Oh, I've got a bit of name dropping from earlier as well. Shall I tell you about that? I'll do that later. Anyway, Karolina Pliskova is going to start the order of play tomorrow against Zhang Shui of China. We've got Agnieszka Radwanska against Coco Vandeweghe after that. Then it's Rafael Nadal against Leonardo Meyer. Nice job with the interviews yesterday, by the way. I enjoyed the Tony Nadal and Carlos Mora. If you haven't heard those, go back and listen to yesterday's podcast, because that was very interesting. Evening session, Catherine. We spoke at length yesterday about Roger Federer against whoever he played. Who did he play yesterday?
Mikhail Yuzhny.
Oh, yeah, that was that memorable. I've already forgotten. But anyway, he plays Feliciano Lopez in the Arthur Ashe Stadium night match. And that was going to be my name drop, by the way. I had a little drink with Feliciano Lopez on the eve of the tournament, Catherine Whittaker. And he was telling me about how, yeah, he still plans to carry on playing at least another year. So, you know, there you go.
Why wouldn't he? He's 35 years young.
That's right. It's the new thing, isn't it?
It's the new thing, yeah.
So anyway, now I've done my name dropping. Feliciano Lopez has been speaking to Catherine Whittaker ahead of his match with Roger Federer.
So, Feliciano, big match coming up for you tomorrow on the Arthur Ashe Arena night session. How are you feeling about your tennis going into that?
I'm good. I'm pretty confident. No, I think I had a great start. You know, it was back-to-back matches, playing well, and I had a tough draw. You know, Kuznetsov and Verdasco in the second round. So I think it's a great preparation, you know, to play against Roger tomorrow.
I know you don't have the best of records against Roger, but neither did Mikhail Yuzhny going into the match yesterday. How much of that did you watch? And how much confidence does it give you?
I think we were playing at the same time. No, I watched a few games of the fifth set. You know, after I finished, but I haven't seen Roger playing much this year in the Open. No, but it's another chance. You know, for me, it's a great opportunity to play Roger. You know, in this beautiful stadium, we may not play again. No, maybe the last time that we play each other, because we are very old. So. Who knows if I'm going to play Roger Federer again, no? So I take the chance. I will try to do my best tomorrow, no? And let's see what happens.
It's funny, you know, I spoke to Tony Nadal and Carlos Moya the other day and asked them both the same question about whether they wanted Rafa to face Roger here. Carlos said absolutely yes, playing Roger Federer on the Arthur Ashe Stadium is the best occasion in tennis. And Tony said absolutely not, that's a nightmare. How do you feel about it? Because at 35, you never know how many chances there are going
to
be?
To be honest, it's difficult, because yesterday when I finished my match, I was in the locker room watching the last two, three games of the match, and I wanted to play Roger, but on the other way, you know, just to be, you know, and try to advance in the draw, you don't want to play Roger Federer because he's probably the best player in the game right now. But on the other way, you want to play Roger in this stadium, no? Especially for me, we are the same age, so it's maybe the last chance that I have to play, you know, against Roger, no? And I think it ended up both ways could have been great. So I play Roger, and I started from that. I take it.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. So, Feliciana Lopez with you, Catherine.
What a lovely last answer that was. I mean, so, so beautifully honest about playing Roger Federer and the conflict of feelings. You know, he gets to play Roger Federer in New York on Arthur Ashe Stadium at night, and that's basically the best thing in tennis, isn't it? I mean, watching that for us is the best thing in tennis. So can you imagine playing in that? And yet he's probably going to lose. He's got a 12-0 record against him.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, he's probably going to lose. So,
quick, you add up his record and David Ferrer's and Mikhail Yuzhny's.
And then, you know, so then you kind of have the mental processes going on of, I'm 35, is this, am I going to try and sort of be realistic and adjust my expectations? And it's not about winning, it's about experiences now and about just soaking in everything. And if you take that road, then I guess playing Federer on Arthur Ashe Stadium is the best thing ever. But you know, if you want to win, it's probably not. But then, hey, like we chatted about, Mikhail Yuzhny had a pretty appalling record. He's still got an appalling record on paper, but paper doesn't tell the whole story.
No, it doesn't. He's a lovely bloke, is Feliciano Lopez. The reason we met up with him is not because he fancied having hanging around with me. I mean, it's about the last thing he wanted to do, but he did want to accept a quarter size replica of the Queen's Club trophy that Mr. Stephen Farrow came over from London to award to him, and I mean, I think he was quite touched by it.
Oh, he was fantastically touched by it. I spoke to him about it for an interview for Queen's. I hadn't realised that it was a total surprise to him to receive that trophy, and his eyes completely lit up. He was he was quite moved, actually. I think he speaks so beautifully about winning that title. It's the highlight of his career. It's wonderful.
Oh, well, I tell you what, might be a bit of a decent highlight if he were to beat Roger Federer on the Arthur Ashe Stadium. That is to be discovered, whether he will be able to do that. You'll be able to follow that, of course, on Eurosport as well. We also, there's some other cracking matches tomorrow. How about this one? Yelena Ostapenko against Daria Kasatkina. I saw them play against each other in the Charleston final. Kasatkina won comfortably, and Ostapenko, I mean, she looked like she'd swallowed a grapefruit when she was doing her on-court interview at the end of it. Wasn't happy.
Lots happened since then, though. Lots happened. Well, for Ostapenko, not as much as we'd all hoped has happened for Kasatkina.
What was that match you were waiting for with Ostapenko that you're hoping happens?
Ostapenko-Osaka round
four. Oh, and that can still happen because Osaka's still in.
Will happen, David. It will happen. Sorry, Daria.
Oh, okay. Catherine's very confident.
Who does Osaka play?
Well, she's up later on against Kaya Kanepi. I haven't heard much about Kaya Kanepi for a while, but that's on court five. There's so many good matches. Andrei Rublev's out there against Damir Zhuma on court five as well. Late on, there is John Millman, who beat Nick Kyrgios. He's playing tomorrow against Philip Kohlschreiber.
Roberto Bautista Agut plays someone.
Juan Martin Del Potro is that someone.
And Dominic Thiem, Adrian Mannarino. Upset alert.
You always say this about poor old Dominic. You always think he's going to lose.
Adrian Mannarino. No, I don't. No. I mean, predicting an upset is not exactly a bold thing to do this week. And Adrian Mannarino is really tricky. And he's the sort of tricky that can trouble Dominic Thiem.
I'm going Thiem.
Thiem, you and I both know, Dev, I hope I'm wrong, but you and I both know that Thiem is exactly the sort of person that is going to do a Tim Henman and waste the opportunity of this gloriously open draw.
Oh, can't believe... Thiem is listening now and he's got his... he's going to be on the phone any second.
Round of 16, top seed left in, lose to Jonas Bjorkman.
Yeah, but that's a lot... Thiem Henman got to the semi-finals of the US Open, semi-finals of the French Open.
You're saying that wasn't a huge opportunity?
Yeah, it was a huge opportunity, he knows it.
It was gaping.
Yeah,
Thiem Henman ain't losing any sleep at night.
Why is Dominic Thiem's draw so open, though? I mean, he's not in the bottom half of the draw, is he?
No, but the bottom half of the draw is only relatively extraordinarily open. The top half's still... I mean, it's still... all looking great. I know Federer and Nadal are in it, but we've all seen their matches so far. You know, that they're beatable. They are absolutely beatable unless they up their game.
Are we going to get the semi, do you think?
Are we going to get the semi?
Or is it going to be John Millman against someone else?
Bautista Agut. Agut, isn't it?
I'm saying yes.
Are we going to get that semi? I would just say yes at this stage, but goodness me, that's a risky yes.
Catherine Whittaker can't wait, and neither can I. It's Saturday tomorrow as we come from you now. Night session tonight. We'll play it by ear and see if there's anything really exciting happens that we need to tell you about. If not, go and have a look at the results somewhere, and you'll find out what went on. If there's no more after I finish speaking right now, that's why. All right, nothing dramatic has happened. Really, I do need an early night's sleep because I've had a bit of one of those Kyle Edmund back injuries. So, you know, don't all be sympathetic at once, but, you know, it's been kind of that kind of couple of days. Catherine, go and rest
up. They're sympathy pains with David Law. That's what happened to him today.
That's right. So we have been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport. Thank you for listening. Do review us on iTunes and on our Facebook page. Check out our Instagram. Go and buy a T-shirt. I saw one of our listeners posting on Twitter a picture of himself wearing his Tennis Podcast T-shirt in the Arthur Ashe Stadium. How cool was that? I think it was Steve. Well done, Steve.
If anyone can come to the US Open wearing a Tennis Podcast T-shirt and have their photo taken with a police dog, you will be my hero.
What more incentive do you need? Thank you for your company. We'll speak to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.